Okay, I believe it's 10:30. We'll get started. Hopefully there's enough chairs for everybody. Okay. I hope you're enjoying the conference. You didn't have too much of an issue driving here in the snow. I came on Tuesday. I had a class on Thursday, and Wednesday was not going to work too well. So sometimes we're in Wisconsin in February, and that kind of happens. Okay, I will take some questions during the presentation. If it's nothing that's really urgent, maybe you can hold off until the end, but I will take a few throughout the presentation. Okay, introduce myself. I grew up in northern Illinois, still live there. This picture was taken around 1955, the year I was born. You'll notice those cows out there in the pasture, dairy cows. My grandpa's farm, we had about 40 to 50 cows. And that was back in the day when you were not mandated to pasture, but everybody did. If you had dairy or beef or even hogs, you were out on pasture. And the reason why I have the slide here is that in that house, it was either 1959 or 60, I was just a little kid, I first heard about Canada thistle. And how did I hear about it? Grandpa had mentioned that night at the supper table, he says, the neighbor got fined today. And some of you who are younger probably may not know about issues with Canada thistle being fined. There was a time back when you had a township thistle commissioner. And so if you did not keep up with your thistles, guess what? You got visited by the inspector and you did get a fine. And of course, when chemicals became more prevalent, herbicides and that back in the mid to late 60s and that, you know, it's on the books, but it wasn't enforced because, herbicides being used. But there are still areas, even with the organic fields or conventional fields, you got those areas that are hard to get to. The farmers don't get around to mowing, or you've got areas like we have a prairie path where things are not really mowed. You've got suburban neighbors who come out, one of them out in the country, but they know nothing about invasive weeds, noxious weeds like Canada thistle. Okay, way back in 1795 is when legislation was passed in the state of Vermont. It's hard to believe it was that long ago, but it goes back a very, very long ways. As you travel around the country in the summertime, I can remember being 35 miles from the Wisconsin border. We come up to Wisconsin a lot to visit our son up by River Falls, his family. Been up, probably as much time in Wisconsin as Illinois. For a time there, Interstate 90 was just loaded in the median with Canada thistle. Some of you probably remember seeing that. It's in almost all the states. They've said, 43 states? But you notice it's the southern states is not as bad. And why is that? Because the day length in the northern hemisphere is not as long as you go further south towards the equator as it is further north. As you can guess too, it's called Canada thistle. Well, they certainly have long days in the summer, and so they've got a major problem in southern Canada as well too. Okay, if you notice with Canada thistle, it tends to grow more prolific in soils that are anaerobic. Okay, by anaerobic, what do I mean? I mean soils where you don't have the oxygen exchange. Aerobic is with oxygen, anaerobic is without. And so some soil types are just going to be a whole lot worse, and there are typically soil types where it's clay, muck, heavy type of soils. On my farm, I've got a field that's got Houghton muck and Batavia muck soils. And you can be tilling with a field cultivator or whatever implement tool, and you know exactly when you hit that soil type because it pulls harder. Okay, it's tighter soil. And those are the places where it typically is more of an issue. And also, pretty much throughout the entire Midwest, back in 2018 and 19, we'll never forget that. After being somewhat wet from 13 through 17, in 2018, we had 52 inches of rain. In 2019, 54. We usually get 37. And so when you take that amount of extra rain, 106 inches, over consecutive, total over two consecutive years, you've got a situation where you're going to have really wet soils and your air exchange is not going to be very good. In fact, I started getting a lot of phone calls about that time, about 2 years ago, with people asking, you know, all of a sudden these thistles are showing up. You know, little patches became big patches. We want to start out, this is my friend Klaus Martens. Many of you know of Klaus or have heard him speak here out in New York State. He has a good way of approaching it. The question you want to ask first is, what's making those thistle plants grow in that particular area? We typically want to ask, well, how do we eradicate this thistle patch? Because in our culture, we're used to looking at something and, well, I want to get rid of it. So how do I get rid of it? Well, obviously, we can't spray it. We can try vinegar or things like that or other types of products that are certifiable. But we need to look at the bigger issue. The question about how do we eradicate it is going to come, but it's going to come later. So here's a, there's, you know, could be more than one answer. One answer is creating anaerobic soil conditions within the topsoil or subsoil that thistle roots thrive on. I've already talked about that with the wet weather. You know, if conditions aren't right, we may need to change our rotation. I'll be talking about that later. Observation is critical. When you're organic farming, you know, you don't have those rescue treatments. And so you really need to assess the issue and, you know, why is this a problem? You know, going out there and looking at your fields. Not just once in a while, but on a regular basis. You know, if I see, whether it be thistle or any kind of weed, why is that there? Hey, we're talking about the following three crops, very, very typical in this part of the country. Organic farmers that don't have livestock are going to grow corn, crops like oats or wheat or some small grain crop, and soybeans. Okay, these crops for the most part have a very similar life cycle to Canada thistle plants. So what do we do? Well, what I have found it works out the best, and I'm going to be talking about a SARA research project, actually two projects that address this issue. You know, the best thing to do if it's bad enough is to maybe just take it out of production for a year. I know that's not easy to do, but typically if it's bad enough, you're probably better off just to take it out of production. Okay, so what we can do is we can mow it, or we can till it about every 3 weeks. If you're going to till it, it may be maybe two and a half weeks. If you got a wet, warm weather, it may need to be tilled a little sooner. But basically, every 3 weeks or so, you've got to keep hitting. You've got to keep stressing it to weaken the root reserves. A sorghum Sudan grass is part of the SARA research project. I would plant that. I've done it on about 80 acres, which is about 5 fields on my farm. I've got small equipment, small fields, and I've been doing this actually back in 2010. I hosted a Moses Field Day, but basically in the last 5 or 6 years, I've done this a little bit, and it's worked very well using sorghum Sudan grass. I like to seed it around mid-June, but of course in 2018, I think it was so wet, it wasn't done until July 4th, and I still had success. Okay, a key factor in managing Canada thistle is to incorporate a rotation that includes crop with life cycles that differ from Canada thistle. Okay, I've mentioned that before. A lot of people mention that, you know, I'm going to raise, I know Paul Muggy, I don't think he's here, out in Iowa, will do that as part of his rotation. A lot of people have alfalfa grass hay, and that is works typically really well because you're cutting the hay about every 5 or 6 weeks. If it's a nice thick stand of hay, it's going to compete for sunlight and moisture, and it's going to be hard for the thistle to compete with that. But I will say that if your thistle is pretty well established, don't expect alfalfa grass hay to eradicate the thistle. It's probably not going to. You're probably still going to have some there. It may not get worse, but it's probably still going to be there. Okay, here's another option. Let's say you need the income. Okay, so you got a small grain crop, whether it be oats, barley, wheat, whatever it is. Harvest that, and then you still have time to till a field. You might want to plant buckwheat as a cover crop. And I mentioned buckwheat because it grows really quick. It canopies fast. After about 2 weeks, maybe even a little less than 2 weeks, you have a nice thick canopy, a nice thick mat of buckwheat. But remember, buckwheat is a 70 to 90 day crop. And so therefore, once it starts to dry down, even before that 90 days, you're going to get sunlight through there. So it's very good, but only for a short period of time. Okay, if you plant buckwheat, I'm sure some of you probably have planted buckwheat. Have any of you have ever tried buckwheat for a crop or thistle? Okay. The thing about buckwheat is that it can volunteer and be a real problem. But don't let that stop you from growing it. If you can manage it, buckwheat is a great crop, not just for choking out weeds, but also for a cash crop. And then after the buckwheat or whatever short season cover crop, you can plant something like rye, either a cash crop or a cover crop. You can get it in early, and it really should help you for that one-year program. Any questions so far? Okay, some research out of South Dakota shows that light penetration to the soil surface in early May was threefold greater when winter wheat was sown on October 1st versus September 10th. And so you're probably thinking, gosh, it's only 3 weeks, exactly 3 weeks. You know, threefold, that sounds like quite a bit. But remember, and those of you who have done work with crimping rye for soybeans next year, you know how Aaron Silva, I'm sure some of you have been to Old Grain, have heard Aaron Silva talk before about the importance of getting that rye crop in early so you get the growth to it. It's got a tiller. You've got to get the growth to it. And if you don't, whether you're going to no-till soybeans or try to get a handle on thistle control, if you get in too late, it's just not going to tiller. So that's really critical to get the rye in early. You know, for those of you who have livestock, corn silage, you can probably, in this part of the state or further south, you can probably make that happen. But like most of us who raise soybeans, soybeans are not going to be harvested until typically first part of October, mid-October, even later. Another point, too, is do not plant winter wheat after soybeans, because if you've got thistle, you just don't have the time to get a good growth on winter wheat. Okay, this is a thistle patch in my field. This happens to be on a clay knoll. As we know, heavy clays tend to hold moisture a little better. And this was after those 2 years of really wet weather. My point here is that the thistle is in somewhat the middle of the field, but it's not on the edges of the field. When it's on the edges of the field, it's probably coming in from somewhere else other than the field. It's probably how it started. Okay, here we've got a 30-foot border strip, neighbor's field there, that's why I've got the sign up. And the key here is I'm going to use my mower to mow that. But, and then we also do is there's an old fence line there. I have some boys or myself will walk those fence lines before the thistles get too far along, just to keep them out. But there's going to be thistle roots probably in that lane there, and that's why we have to keep mowing it every 3 weeks, just to keep ahead of that. Otherwise, you're going to notice it, and I'm sure some of you have. You've got these patches of thistle that are creeping into your field. You might only have three or four rows the first year. Next year, you have six or seven rows, and before you know it, it extends into the field. Okay, I use a Woods mower. Ideally, a sickle mower or something that cuts it off cleaner is actually better. This is a flail mower, but when you've got areas like along fence lines or you're backing into areas where you've got some trees or whatever, a sickle mower, it just doesn't work in some places. But with this mower here, I can back into almost anywhere and do as good as I can. Okay, when it comes to cutting thistles, hand cutting, what we do is any small grains that we have, I usually have one or two boys help me out. We go through and we cut them by hand. Now, if there's a bad patch in the field, I'll drive out there with my Woods mower and I'll cut those bad patches out. But some places are just a thistle here and a thistle there. So I'm not going to drive over it and lose, you know, part of my crop. One year I went ahead and I think I bought five different clippers. I started out with the cheaper ones, of course, trying to save some money, and the $10 to $15 ones. And you know, within 5 minutes, you'd probably just throw them out because they weren't going to do the job. This, I think, is a company called Corona. I think I bought it at Lowe's. They're all around. This one, I've had that thing probably, I've got five of them, but I've had it for probably 10 years. Sharpen it maybe once or twice a year. That thing lasts forever. And so if you're going to look for something to hand cut thistles, I would recommend that one right there. Also, of course, we use bean hooks we take all the broadleaf weeds out of our soybeans. And so that's what we use for that. That would also work as well, too. Yes?
Yeah, do you see any difference in pulling and cutting in the ground?
Okay, when you're talking about pulling, are you talking about pulling as part of the root out, too? Or? Well, the issue with that is that pulling doesn't really do much better, at least in my experience, because you're not going to get, not only the root out, the vertical root, but the lateral root, too. And so I think cutting is better. There'll be a slide at the very end that has an opinion from a farmer up in Canada. But if you cut it clean, then you allow, water to get down into that root. Now, whether that helps, I can't say. I haven't seen the research on it. Maybe there's no research to be had on that topic. But if you do cut it clean and you got that opening there, you're going to get oxygen that's going to go down into that root, down into the underground roots. And the more oxygen, the better it's going to work. I'm not saying it's going to, alleviate it, but it's going to help. Okay, this is a research project. I was on the SARA Council when this was submitted. I obviously couldn't vote on it, but this was accepted. It was a 2007 through 2009, those proposals. Many of you probably have been involved in that, maybe a research project. And this was an R&E proposal, the higher dollar ones. And this was submitted, like I say, in 2007. And if you want to look up that grant, I think there might even be some handouts I turned in if they have it for this. But you can go onto their website and you can look up that number, find out more about it. Okay, what they have found out over the time that we did this was there is 90% control of Canada thistle in the four states of Iowa, Missouri, Illinois, and Wisconsin. But the point I want to point out here is that the long-term impact is unknown. Now, maybe there's some research out there that goes out, for many years. Maybe, I'm not aware of any. But, it might look good for 3 or 4 years, but what if you have to do the same thing over again? You may not want to do it. So that is the question mark there. Okay, this is on my farm. And what we have here, we got sorghum Sudan grass on the headland. And I had some more Sudan grass in another plot in the field. And then, as you know, there's buckwheat here and here. It's not shown here. We had some cowpeas. And then, even though you wouldn't really want to do this, but this is just research purposes only, it was black fallow. And you can see the thistles there. So that was just, it was tilled every, probably 3 weeks, and we were comparing the different systems, cover crops and just bare fallow with tilling to see how it would work. Okay, I've kind of named this the smother and starve approach for suppressing Canada thistle. As I mentioned before, sorghum Sudan grass is very competitive. Have any of you ever grown Sudan grass, sorghum Sudan grass? Okay, a number of you have. Okay, what Sudan grass does, it obviously grows really quick, gets very tall. You've got the photosynthesis thing there working for you. It's so thick that it's going to block out a lot of sunlight. So the thistle plant is competing with Sudan grass for sunlight. And the Sudan grass is going to get a whole lot taller than the Canada thistle. What this is here is a grass waterway. of course, on the edge of the waterway, you're going to get a little sunlight, but not really a whole lot. The best time to clip or cut the Sudan grass is right about this time or slightly before. I like to get it right before it heads out. It heads out really quickly, and you can see it's starting to head out right there. Now, I've got 7 waterways on my farm, and whether it's the edge of the field or it's a waterway, you can't till those out, so you have to mow it. And that's typically where you're going to get your Canada thistle. You're going to get some creeping up in here, and before you know it, it's going to be working into your field. Okay, not only with Canada thistle, but if you look really close, in fact, it's even hard for me to find it, I think it's right about here, that is a gypsum weed. Okay, gypsum weeds in corn or bean fields, especially bean fields, is going to get pretty massive. It might get up to waist high and that. But the good thing about that weed is that it went to seed, it's not going to reproduce, and so that's never going to be there again. So not only does it control Canada thistle, but obviously with that thick of biomass there, I mean, just look at how thick that is, it's going to control your other weeds too. Okay, we're talking about this time the starvation effect. It's got a very competitive root system. It competes for moisture, and it acts as a subsoil loosener. Okay, these are sorghum Sudan grass roots. Now, obviously, they're not as large as rooted in a corn plant, but remember, when you're planting corn, you're probably going to plant corn in that 30 to 36,000 plants per acre. Okay, when you plant sorghum Sudan grass at 50 to 60 pounds an acre, depending upon your seed size, but as a general rule, you're going to be planting about 600,000 seeds per acre. So you look at those roots, you're going to have probably a dry spell almost always every summer, maybe early fall. And so with the starvation effect, you're going to have those roots, all those plants out there competing with moisture for that Canada thistle. And so it's really getting stressed two ways. You're blocking the sunlight with photosynthesis action, and you're also competing with the roots of the sorghum Sudan grass to take up that moisture. Okay, again, I'd like to seed around mid-June. If not then, you can still plant it a little bit later. Now, the key point here is 50 to 60 pounds an acre. And I say that because if you look in your seed catalogs, and you see sorghum Sudan grass, typically it'll say 25 to 30 pounds an acre. But if you look a little closer, that is probably going to be a seeding rate for a pasture or for livestock grazing. What we want to do here is, if we're going to take out of production for a year and not have any income and do all the work and buy the seed, in my opinion, you just put it on a little bit on the heavy side because you've already got, you know, your expenses. An extra $10 for a few more pounds of seed or 15, whatever it is really a non-factor. You really shouldn't sow it too deep, but of course you need to get it into moisture. And if you've got moisture, I would say about an inch to an inch and a half deep. Okay, the research in this particular project suggests if you look that grant up later on when you get home, it talks about using a sterile variety. Okay, well that's fine. But the sterile varieties are typically quite a bit more expensive. And so I tried a non-sterile variety over 80 acres. The only place I've had any come back was a spot, maybe about a 3-foot square spot, and that was it. So I say you can probably save some money and you can go with a non-sterile variety. But do whatever you want to do. That's just been my experience. Okay, as far as we got to weaken the root reserves, that's where all the energy is coming from with the carbohydrates, and we need to hit it again and again. I like to use my quack digger. If you use a disc, you know, that'll do the job too, but remember, you're dicing those roots up into smaller pieces, but there's still pieces that are going to propagate and will probably be a problem later on. So I like to use a field cultivator. Obviously, if you can, a warm, sunny, dry day is always best. And this is, I've got 2 field cultivators, a wide sweep. You can buy these, you know, for about $800, $1,000, maybe $1,200 on a farm auction. That's a 16 and a half footer. If I want to go really deep, I can put the wings up. But you'll notice Those are double points. You can buy them at Shoop or almost anywhere. The points are not too much money. You get, if they get some wear, eventually you just flip it upside down. It's only about 2 inches wide. And now that this farm that I'm on, we made the transition in 87, 88. We've been certified now for, 33 years or so. The soil just moves a whole lot better than it used to, so I like to use this more than my white sweet field cultivator, even on my last pass before corner beans. And I say that because the soil moves a whole lot better. I wait as long as I can to work up the ground. When the soil is dried out a little more from the early spring. But for the Canada thistle, I rather dig that up out of the ground than to cut it. It just seems you pull up more roots, expose it to the air, to the sun, wind, and so forth, and it seems to work a whole lot better. Okay, this is a huge issue. We're talking about off-farm seed dispersal. I would imagine a number of you here have had thistles blown into your farm. Show of hands. Okay. And I probably shouldn't ask the next question, which would be, are your thistles blown into someone else's farm? For all honest, we probably have, if we're a little too late, it's probably going to happen. So my two key points here. First one is to purchase weed seed, a weed-free seed only. And I think we all make mistakes at times, well, I know we do. I made mine back in probably 92 or 93. We had a few years when spelt was pretty popular. There was a good market in the East for spelt. I bought some tote bags of spelt seed, and I wish I would have bought it sooner, but you know how it is. You get it, and you need it, in a couple of days. Oh, I opened up the bag, and there was more than a few canned thistle. If there would have been seeds in there. If there had been more, I would have not taken it. But at the time, okay, I got it, I'm going to use it. And that can be a real problem if you've got seed that's got, canned thistle seed. And even 1 year I bought some seed from a seed dealer. There was some ragweed seed in it. Fortunately, that was soybeans. We cut all of our broadleafs and never had a problem. But my point is that always inspect that seed. If you can, try to buy your seed ahead of time so that if there is, and very seldom you're going to have a problem with that, but you just never know. Most of your seed dealers, like those that are here, are really good about that. You're not going to have a problem. But if you buy it from someone you really don't know, they're more independent, or another farmer, always check and make sure there's no weed seeds, because if it's in your seed, it's going to be in your field, and it'll probably be there for the rest of your life. And then, of course, the next issue here is to educate your neighbors. Now, where I'm at, I'm between Rockford and Chicago. We're in a rural area, but it's an area that is kind of an urban sprawl as well, too. And so we had a neighbor across the road property was on the south of my property. And, of course, in the summertime, you get a lot of south wind. And he didn't have a clue what was going on. In fact, I did talk to him. I says, I'll mow those thistles for you. It's a little time and money, but I just don't want to see those things blowing on my farm. And he said, well, actually, he was kind of enjoying watching them blow in the wind. Well, he grew up in Chicago. Okay, he had no concept or idea about Canada thistle. So that brings me up to my next slide. Okay, yeah, I imagine those of you who noticed, who chuckled, were probably my age or older. That was one of Bob Dylan's famous hits, Blowing in the Wind. I guess I couldn't resist that one. Okay, now cut in the thistles. Yes, Carmen? That's a good point, yeah. Carmen brings up a really good point. I've seen some of that research. I've not really delved into it very much, but you're right. It's like a strawberry plant. I mean, those rhizomes, you got a patch maybe the size of this table 1 year, and next year is just going to expand out and out and out. And so where the thistles start is usually in the middle of the patch, And you know where it's at. Most of it is right there. It propagates more through the rhizomes. So what I do, I use my Haybine. That's you know what the research has showed. It's a sickle mower. It cuts it nice and clean. And then what I also do is there's a, for those of you familiar with these things, what they call a windrow gate. If you have the gate all the way up, it's going to windrow it. Like if you're cutting hay and you're going to put it up for hay leach or whatever. But in this case, I put that gate all the way down. So when the Sudan grass and whatever else is in there goes through that hay bind, it's going to deflect off that shield, off that gate. And the gate is vertical all the way down. So when it comes back, it's going to bounce off that. And it's going to give me a wider swath as possible. Now, it's not 100% coverage because where your tires are on the outside of the machine, you're going to have about a foot to a foot and a half that you're not going to have coverage on. Yeah.
Are you running it through?
Okay. Thank you for bringing that up. Yeah, that's why.
And when you're handling
it. I'm sorry. Okay, about the question was about handling that sorghum Sudan grass, because we know there's a lot of biomass there, and the later you cut it, there's obviously a lot more. Okay, and I've got a slide coming up that'll address that issue, but for right now, you're going to have to drive slow. If you get it before it goes to seed, it's usually not too bad, unless it's lodged pretty bad. And so, you know, it seems to work fine. But again, you know, what I do is I cut it about 12 to 16 inches off the ground. And why do I cut it that height? Well, for one, is that you've got less to take through the haybine. But also, you want to keep that on top of the stubble as much as possible, but you don't maybe really have to. But the good thing about that is if you want it to regrow, you've got it off the ground enough so that the regrowth will happen. If you cut it all the way down, there's so much biomass there that it's probably not going to grow back. And that may not be all bad. I'll be talking about that soon. But it cut it that far off the ground. It's going to, you know, within a few days, it's all, you know, grass, basically. It looks like a corn plant, but it's grass. It dries pretty quickly, and your new growth should come through without any problems. Okay, this is the second option. This is the flail chopper. I use that to chop corn stalks with. And what I did one year, back to your question, was that we had a time when we had a lot of rain, and guess what? It started to lodge. And so I'm out there with a haybine going in even a slower gear, maybe 2 miles an hour at most, and it's not really feeding in all that well through the haybine. So it was time to try something different. Okay, and what was that? That was this flail chopper. And so what I did was I changed my philosophy a little bit. I thought, you know, it did a good job. I mean, if it was an offset hitch, it'd be better because then you aren't having to drive over where you're, you know, right in front of your chopper. If you have an offset hitch, like a haybine or whatever, you've only got one pass around the edge of the field, and you aren't driving over, but you're chopping. But I found out that even driving over it, the flail chopper, there's enough suction there. You've got those little air holes through there and that. It creates enough of a vacuum that it really picks it up very well. And so I chopped that pretty close to the ground with the intent of not having it grow back. It was planted later that year, and everything was a little bit later. I thought, you know, if I can just keep it on the ground, won't be any sunlight coming through, and with something like this, you're going to get basically 100% coverage, unlike the haybine. And so if I were to do this again, I think I would just do it this way and not have any regrowth, and I think I'd be okay with that. But I haven't done it enough to really say, but that's what I would do again if I had that issue. And this is cut later in the fall. You'll see a little patch of snow right there. This was cut in November. You don't have to mow it, but I like to just because, you know, I want some of that material chopped up. But we still got plenty of residue there. And then this time of year, remember, the sunlight is not really going to have a positive effect on thistle growth because this is November, even October. You know, we're not getting much sunlight. at that time of year, you know, maybe 10 to 11 hours a day, and that's just not enough to encourage any growth of Canada thistle. Okay, here was another pleasant surprise I found out. Okay, there's a strong allelopathic effect the following year after sorghum Sudan grass. What I had noticed was that in a field going to corn or soybeans, I estimate at least a week, maybe even 10 days, suppression of broadleaf weeds. I'm not talking, you know, quack or thistles. I'm just talking annual weeds like your broadleaves. That there was that much of a delay in the weeds that were going to germinate in your crop like corn or beans. Okay, sorghum Sudan grass has a cleansing effect. It creates allelopathic compounds. Also, biofumigates the soil with a gaseous active substance that is produced by decomposition of freshly chopped plant material. So you've got a lot of good things going for you there. It's not just, you know, the fact that, yes, you took it out of production for a year. Okay, but, you know, if you got a one-term cash rent lease, then I'm not so sure you want to do that. But a lot of times for organic farms, if it's your own land, you call the shots. You know, you've got that flexibility, you've got that option. If you've got a long-term lease with someone else, that'll be much better too. When you're cash rent leases, well, you know, that's a whole other issue. But when you can do that, and then you figure, okay, the next year I'm going to have less weeds, you know, much difference in yield, maybe, maybe not, but, you know, easily maybe 10 bushel on corn or maybe 4 or 5 bushel on soybeans because of the fact you got those weeds, they were delayed. And 7 to 10 days may not seem like much, but I think a lot of us realize that in that short of a period of time, even you know, a week or so, that's plenty enough time to get a jump on the weeds, on the broadleaf weeds. Okay, I got a few pictures here I got offline. We see the lateral root here and the vertical roots up here. When we're going to till that field, whether it be disc, field cultivator, or whatever, we're probably, you know, going to do some damage to these vertical roots. But those lateral roots are going to be probably 16 inches or maybe even lower, you know, low enough to where we're not really going to be able to dig those out. And so, yes, you're going to set it back. It's going to look good for a while, but it's only going to be for a time. Have any of you seen this picture before? Okay, yeah, I think it's a popular one. I forget where it's out of. It might be Purdue, I'm not sure. But this is a soil sample, a large soil sample, and you see the, you know, a lot of thistles on top there. But you probably wouldn't guess it would look like this. That's how bad it can be. And as I said before, you know, the roots can extend a long ways, maybe 15 feet or more. Vertical roots can travel long ways. And as that picture just showed, and the next one coming up, is what you can't see can be devastating. Same picture. Yes? Okay, the question was asked that they've never used a herbicide before, but if you were to use a herbicide, is that going to kill the thistle roots, you know, all the way down to the point where it's not going to come back again, okay? I'm not sure I can necessarily answer that. It definitely sets it back in most situations. When you've got a root mass like that, I would be surprised, but I should let someone else answer that. Any researchers here? Yes? Okay, I'm going to ask Joel here, who's presenting next. Joel, do you want to provide any input or thoughts?
Yeah, I'm not an expert on herbicides. But what I was reading last night, early this morning, there are systemic herbicides that do translocate down into the roots. They don't necessarily provide 100% control, but they provide a high level of control. And Canada thistle, even though it is a very serious weed to control, it has no known herbicide resistance. So it's very resistant to mechanical control. It is not resistant to many of our herbicides that have systemic ability to move down into the roots.
Okay, thanks. And I think some of us before have probably tried some vinegar, like in places around our garden and so forth. You know, I've done that. It looks great. It turns brown and that, but you know, it just doesn't quite do the job. Okay, this next project, and I should, I don't know if Chris and Julie are, yes? Okay, the question is, do I use sorghum Sudan or straight Sudan grass? I've always used sorghum Sudan grass because it's worked, but I would say, you know, I bought it from Albert Lee Seed, and they're here. You know, Matt or Joe or Carl or anyone in the booth there could probably answer that one. I mean, the whole key to it is anything you can use that's going to grow fast, it's going to have a lot of biomass, it's going to block out the sun, is probably going to work. Okay, so the question is, did it make, correct me, Walter, if I'm not right, chopping it versus? Okay, I did, I chopped it, but I did not remove it. No, okay, I don't think Paul Hoffman is here, is he? Jerry Gibbons, okay. What Paul has done, Paul's about an hour southwest of me, he's got a grain operation and sheep. He has, and this is in some of Old Grain, Aaron Silva's literature. In fact, I think there's one on the Old Grain table. There's something there about, I think, Paul's research on his farm. And he has grazed his sheep, but I don't think he puts them out there until like mid to late August. And at that time, again, you know, we're losing daylight pretty fast. And it's worked for him. But again, how many years, you know, it's really hard to... tell that because we haven't had the long-term research on it. Okay, I don't think, are Chris or Julie in this class? I don't think they are. Anyway, I want to point out a project that they did. This, I noticed it, some of you probably get the SARA, North Central Region field notes. And if you get those, it only comes, I don't know, maybe what, 3 or 4 times a year at most probably. But this was on the front page. And it was a very successful farmer rancher grant, the smaller scale grants. It like I say, this was finished, I think the next slide will show it here. They're two onion farm. They're in Belmont, Wisconsin, which is not too far from Platteville, you know, south of here. They have an orchard operation. And so we're talking about when to mow. Okay, you need to mow it probably earlier than what a lot of us get around to doing. You need to mow it before those rosettes open up when they turn like a lavender kind of color. 7 to 9 leaf stage in there somewhere, and when it's about the research out of Cornell, for those of you who were at Old Grain here a few weeks ago with Matt Ryan, one of his slides, you know, kind of said basically the same thing. Get it when it's about 12 inches tall. A lot of people will wait a little bit later than that. Again, I can't prove, you know, exactly when is the best time, but this research project was well done, and I would tend to say that this would probably be a good way to go about it. Okay, there's two pages here that are really, in my opinion, very good. Okay, so this is the ground level where this brown horizontal line is at. Okay, we got the stored resources and reserves below ground level, and we got 8 leaves there. Okay, so it starts out being pretty healthy. So then what you're gonna do, however you do it, you're gonna mow this off as close to the ground as possible. But you still got the root down there. Okay, that plant's gonna grow back, and it shows the flow of the energy, the resources from the root coming up, and there you've got a new shoot. Okay, so that shoot's going to grow up, and as it's growing vertical, you're going to deplete the resources down below here. Okay, at about this point, as this slide says, there's ideal time to kill a thistle shoot. When resources in the root have been depleted and the shoot has not begun to return resources to the root. So it's a timing issue. Okay, and let's say that it's not killed. It should be killed by this point. If it's not, then the new shoot is now large enough to support its own growth and return resources to the root. And in the process, you're going to have another root. And that's what we talk about when we get the expansion of the roots. So, just to follow up here, this is about it. Repeat mowing, mow close to the ground level every 3 weeks, no longer than 3 weeks. Better to mow a couple days early than to get a situation where you get a rainy spell and you're going to be a week or two later. On this particular project, they started mowing on the 22nd of May, and they mowed exactly within a day or two every 3 weeks until late September, early October timeframe. Now, if you're further north or south, you might want to adjust that a week or two. But the point here is persistence and timing are critical. I mean, if you're going to do this, if you're going to take out a production, or even if it's land that is not in production, if you're going to do it, you know, try to do it right. And just as I mentioned before, just some insights here. This is anecdotal information, not research. But, you know, one guy had mentioned here that using a quack digger is most effective 2 days before the new moon. Maybe that's true. I just don't know. Maybe some of you have tried something like that. Has anyone tried that? Okay. Again, use a cyclotype mower is best. You know, they say water into the hollow stems. I'm not sure if it's the water into the hollow stems or if it's actually the oxygen being allowing to get down into those roots by making a nice clean cut with a cyclotype mower. Sweet clover, I raised some sweet clover as a cover crop, you know, 30-some years ago. I liked it, but you have to be careful with sweet clover. There could be some issues with it. And what I like to do, whether it's Canada thistle, perennials, quack, or even annual weeds, this I got out of the Canadian Growers handbook. Any of you have that handbook? I know Carmen does, maybe a few more. Even though, you know, you're talking Canada, you're talking a lot of pulses and lentil type of crops, 60 to 90 day crops, it is an excellent book. It's spiral bound. It's got everything I think you really need to know to farm organically. But this came out of that book. You just list the weeds you've got. You know, again, the big question, the observation, why are these weeds causing an issue? You know, and we might think we remember what has worked and what has not has worked, and I'm sure we probably do. But if you ask me what happened, what worked or didn't work 30, 35, 40 years ago, probably not going to remember all that. So here you've got just a sheet. You can put this in your farm records. Any other observations or anything you want to put in there could be really helpful. And these are my references. Any questions before Joel comes up? Yes?
So we set this up kind of this last year where we had planted corn 2 years before. And I've heard there is this kind of relationship that you said it might be timing, but 2 years later, maybe I didn't notice that you might be planting a field that was fallow. We cut for 3 days, three people cut seed heads. We bagged them and we then wrapped them in greenhouse film and solarized them for the rest of the summer. So we solarized the cut Canada thistle seed heads in bags, wrapped again in black bags, and then wrapped them again in greenhouse film. And now they're sitting next to my burn pile, and the bags are sitting there, and I'm wondering, is burning going to do something that I don't intend? Is burning, I mean, how does the seed respond to fire, I should ask?
Okay, I'll try to repeat the question. You had grown corn for, a couple years?
Yeah.
Okay, and then you noticed Canada thistle coming back in.
Yep.
And then you went ahead and you cut the thistles.
By hand.
By hand, and you put them in a bag.
Yes.
And so I think your question is, correct me if I'm wrong, is that somehow you want to dispose of that Canada thistle seed.
Right.
And how to go about that.
Yes.
Okay, that's a great question, because I, you know, larger grain scale operations, we obviously don't do it that way. I would say, I mean, obviously it's not going to be a problem once you've cut it. I guess the issue, what I see, is if it's going to somehow get exposed, if the wind's, is that what you're concerned about? Is
no,
maybe the wind blowing it? Or
no, we're going to burn it. We're planning to burn it. And so my question is, how does it respond to fire? Because some seed is, you know, enhanced by fire, you know, rejuvenated by fire. And then overall, if we were to burn fields with Canada thistle, what impact would that have? So two questions.
Okay, the impact on Canada thistle with burning?
Yep.
I actually can't answer that question because I've never dealt with that or had that question before. Anyone? Yes.
I know that it does not carry fire if you were going to try and burn through it.
It does not what? Carry fire? I'm burning thistle that's been cut, so my question is, if I burn it in a burn pile, is that seed going to be viable after I burn it?
Well, another thing, too, is if you had it for a period of time, you're going to get some dry down, and you're going to have, you know, the plant's going to shrink up, and it's probably maybe hot enough fire will burn easier, obviously, than burning it right after it's cut. So I guess then if it's a hot enough fire, I would certainly think it would destroy the seed, but I can't answer that.
Yeah, I don't know that anyone in this room has the definitive answer to that, but I don't think that Canada thistle is a species where fire enhances its germination.
Okay, that's okay? The question I have.
I guess one quick question. Do you think that the seeds had matured when you were cutting it? Because
Yes, definitely had.
Okay.
They were in the stage where they were starting to, you know, head into other people's fields.
Okay, It was blowing out of the field.
Yes, but we also cut the flower heads at the base, the rosettes.
Right. Yeah, you have a comment?
Yeah, when we burned it before, it turns to ash, no problem.
Okay, so his experience is that with burning it, it ashed and there was no more germination of cannabis.
Perfect, thank you.
Yes.
If you get a new infestation of thistle in your field, how long does it take for the lateral roots to form?
Okay, the question is, how long does it take for the lateral roots to form? I really don't know, because you'd have to do some serious digging, I think, in that. I would suppose, obviously, quicker, you know, where your patch starts, and it's going to extend out. So yeah, I would guess within 2 years probably.
Well, so I read a little bit about this, and if you're starting with the seedling, the literature suggests that for the first 6 weeks you have an annual plant. It becomes a perennial in about 6 weeks, and that's when it starts to have a storage root that is basically the beginning of a lateral root. And within 1 year of a seedling establishing, it can grow up to 15 feet of lateral root. But that doesn't, you know, it does not have that lateral rooting immediately. That takes about 6 weeks, and then it begins to start to grow that storage root horizontally.
Okay, if there's no other questions, Joel?
Okay, well, I can move this down a little bit. How is the audio now? Good.
Well, I'll turn mine off. Maybe that'll make a difference.
Well, I think Dave laid a fantastic foundation, very practical foundation, his experience with research, his collection of some other research results, and I am fortunate that he shared with me his slides in advance, so I'm going to try and share some complimentary information, and obviously we can continue with a dialogue, continue with hearing your experiences, and you know, try and just use all the wealth of knowledge that we have in this room. It's certainly not Dave and myself. And I don't have nearly as much experience controlling Canada thistle in a farming environment as Dave. Okay, so I guess just very quick introduction. I'm Dr. Joel Groover. I'm at Western Illinois University, where I was looking for more undergraduate students, young or old. It doesn't matter what age you are. Obviously, most of the students are 18 to 22, but we also sometimes have very experienced farmers or industry people in the classroom, and it enhances the, you know, the discussion in the classroom greatly. We don't have too many online courses, but you know, with COVID, we learned how to do that, and maybe we'll have more of those in the future. But please do think about sending people our way, whether it be you or other people you know. So how many of you are familiar with this book? So this came out 2021. We're not quite seeing the top of the slide, but what you could see on the far right is chapter one, actually chapter two, I believe. And it's just a really good overview of all the ecological concepts you need to think about. Okay, let me maybe bring this down even more. I have my teacher voice. I don't know how to turn that off. This is a book like really none other that I have ever seen that is targeted at farmers. And it came out 2021. It's out of researchers, two of them from Cornell University. So it's a lot of Cornell research, but also much broader research as well. And so beyond just Canada thistle, if you want to expand your understanding of weeds, this is really the new book to look at. Where did the clicker go? Oh, there it is. Perfect. Okay, and so this is showing chapter three and chapter four. Chapter three is all about cultural management, so your cropping system strategies. Chapter four is all about steel, all about the strategies where you use mechanical, physical methods to control. And just really good information. The book Steel in the Field, which came out in 1997, is another great book, and it's really, this is a much more detailed presentation, but not nearly as many pictures as Steel in the Field. Okay. One of the sections of the Chapter 4 steel discussion is specifically about using tillage against perennial weeds. And you know, the idea here is that we have perennial storage organs that have stored carbohydrates. And our goal is to exhaust those carbohydrate reserves. And so basically the timing of when you do the tillage or the mowing or any type of termination of the top is very important. Also, it matters whether you have shallow storage roots or deep storage roots. Canada thistle, of course, has both. And it has a lot that are very deep, that are below the depth that we would ever do tillage. So we can't expect that we're just going to cut up and lift to the surface all the Canada thistle roots. Unlike something like quackgrass, lots of very shallow roots within the depth of tillage. It's still very hard to control, but we can expect that we can cut and lift those roots quite differently than something like Canada thistle. Here's another key idea. So it talks about the deep-rooted perennials versus the shallow-rooted perennials. Canada thistle is a deep-rooted perennial. It suggests 6 to 8 well-timed tillage events the first year, followed by 3 to 5 the second year. And it talks about some specific tools, like Dave talked about, a field cultivator, spring-tooth harrow, sweep plow. It doesn't say disc, because just cutting it up isn't nearly as good as a tool that is horizontal and lifts. That's a better approach. Chapter 5 is profiles of farms with innovative weed management practices, including, we heard about the Martins in New York, Paul Muggy in Iowa. These are great profiles, but there isn't a single mention of Canada thistle. I was sad to see that. But Dave did mention that O'Grains has some nice case studies, and one of Dave and one of Paul Hoffman and some other people that do have specific experience with Canada thistle described in their case studies. So you can look for those. But these are very good case studies, and they talk about some of the strategies that are useful in controlling Canada thistle. Anybody know the Nordells? So really good vegetable farmers. The last time I talked to them was maybe 20 years ago. So they would be fairly senior now, but they developed a very impressive system of vegetable production where they want to do no manual weeding of vegetable crops, which is, you know, that's ambitious, but they had a system where they would have a summer fallow period. And so it would be bare fallow and then cover crop fallow, and those types of strategies are what Dave was talking about for really exhausting and then smothering weeds. And it allowed them to grow onions and garlic and other crops with no hand weeding. And then the rest of the book is all specific crop profiles. And these are detailed profiles, much more detailed than you would typically find. The Canada thistle section is 5 pages. And so I would recommend that you take a look at that. They have probably more than 50 weeds that are profiled in this book. And they have also chapters that kind of summarize the key concepts. Here you can see Canada thistle. I guess one key thing to look at, over near the right, it says 12-inch shoots, flower bud set. That's when you have the minimum carbohydrate storage in the roots. And so that's when it's most important that you decapitate the plant, because then it's going to try and grow more, but it won't have very much energy left. And that's, so you are doing the most damage to the energy reserves. One decapitation at that time is not sufficient, but that is the time that you can have the most negative effect with cutting off the top. I hadn't even thought about this, but right to the right of where it says 12-inch shoots, it says C3. Anybody know what that means? C3 photosynthesis, and what that means in terms of the big picture is that's a plant that's going to respond to elevated CO2. So we will have more problems with Canada thistle, and you can see all of those listed are C3s. Those are weeds that just will be more robust when they have elevated CO2. So there are not a whole lot of pictures in this 5-page section, but you can see some nice pictures at the top here. And I guess real quick, Carmen was commenting about how most of the seeds drop. I also read that. The floss is not well attached to the seeds compared to like dandelion, compared to milkweed. And so it actually mostly detaches, and most of the seeds do not travel very far. Also, the seeds, while they are tiny, they are not anywhere as close as tiny as like a dandelion seed. They're a big enough seed. That's why they can end up in some of our purchased cover crop seeds, because they're big enough that they don't just immediately clean out. And so, I think while blowing in the wind is certainly an issue, it's not the main way by any means the Canada thistle propagates. There's another piece of this that we'll talk about shortly, but the main way Canada thistle propagates is vegetatively. That's probably 95% or more, and that's what we really need to focus on primarily. Yeah?
Maybe we'll get to this, but has anybody studied how long does a Canada thistle clone live?
So the question was about how long does a Canada thistle clone live? I think, you know, there are lots of things that would influence the mortality of a clone, but if with no suppression, they just keep expanding. They live for a very long time. But if you're aggressively suppressing a clone, then it's a very different story. But this, I guess this is a good time to mention this. These patches are clones, and they are either male or female. That's something that I guess I didn't even know until recently. So a single patch, as far as all the literature described, really cannot pollinate, because you have to have male and female flowers, and they have separate male and female plants, separate male and female flowers. So if you only have one patch and you have hundreds of feet to the next patch, apparently it's insect pollination, about 200 feet is typically about the amount of distance where you stop having nearly as much insect pollination. And so basically this is just another reason why seed dispersal is not nearly as important as vegetative propagation. Did you have a comment, Carmen? Yes, so he's commenting about difference in the flower and what it looks like. The male has a narrower flower that's only less than half an inch. The female flower will expand at its full width is close to an inch, and it gets much more fuzzy looking. I said that this new book came mostly out of Cornell. Cornell has essentially the same chapter, just with a lot more detailed information. So when you're reading through it, you're like, I have read this before, if you've read the book chapter, but it's substantially longer. And so if you find the book chapter interesting, you should probably go to the Cornell website and read the more detailed version, because it does have more information. Another very good publication is this one out of Colorado State, and they have done, I think, more research on biological control of Canada thistle than any other university. And so that's something that is discussed here. They actually, in Colorado, they supply some biological controls. You can get that from their Department of Agriculture. Two main species here, a weevil, and then also an insect that creates a gall. And those are available from the Colorado Department of Agriculture. I do not think that they are available in the Midwest. But I do know that, Perry, do you want to comment on what you were able to get from Colorado? And this is specifically, Michael Fields is doing some work with this, and it's available, as you were saying, in Wisconsin, maybe from you?
Yeah, Michael Fields, just this last year, was able to apply to USDA and get a permit to import a fungus from Colorado, from the western part of Colorado. It's a Pernicia fungus, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, I believe.
Yeah, and I think it's just called thistle rust or something that is the common name.
It only attacks Canadian thistles. But we had to get a permit from USDA and one from the Department of Agriculture here in the state to import it. I grew a really nice half-acre patch of thistles, and we applied across parts of that patch. We applied it in the fall. We won't know till in the spring whether it took or not. But if it does and we get permission from the Department of Agriculture, we'll be able to then collect leaves from the damage from the infected plants and then start to use it here across the state of Wisconsin.
One key thing to keep in mind, the reason why they have done work on this in Colorado and in Montana, those are places with Canada thistle in rangeland where nobody is going to be out there tilling or mowing. And so they need biological controls. These biological controls are a little hammer compared to some of the things that we've already been talking about: tillage, mowing, smothering. And so, if you have a patch out in your field, I don't think you really want to wait to allow these insects to do the whole job for you, because all the literature suggests they will not. I mean, if you have enough biological activity going on it will significantly suppress an infestation in the rangeland. But in your crop field, we need to use the biggest hammers that we have available, if possible. What just happened here? I just switched to the other presentation. Okay. Another thing I found, actually the longest, most detailed discussion of all of Canada thistle, you can't see the link at the top, but it's called Weeding Out a Solution, Best Management Practice for Canada Thistle. This was an undergraduate research project, and it's 27 pages. It's targeted at Minnesota. It's got lots of good information. I mean, this is the most comprehensive discussion of Canada thistle and its management that I have seen, but it's an undergraduate research project. I've read lots and lots of undergraduate research projects, and like all of them, I mean, this is not perfect. It's not a scientific publication, but it is a wealth of information. The young man did a great job writing this, but I mean, for example, he talks about the cost per acre, and he includes the entire cost of the tractor. So his cost per acre is like $100,000, because that's what it costs to buy the tractor. Okay, so just keep that in mind if you track this down, but it's full of interesting information.
How do we track it down?
Okay, so Weeding Out a Solution, Best Management Practice for Canada Thistle, there is a link at the top up there, and wait just a sec. Yeah. Yeah, it's an easy find.
Google the title and you'll get to the publication.
Okay. Anyway, so we'll just go through a little more biological detail than what Dave was talking about, just to help us think in more depth about this plant. It can germinate from seeds. That's not the main way it propagates, but you can see on the left a very young Canada thistle seedling, and then a more mature one on the right. If it's coming from a seed, it's going to have cotyledons. If you don't see cotyledons, then it came from a piece of root and it is growing vegetatively. And so when it is in these growth stages as a seedling, it's an annual plant. If you terminate that plant, that's it. It has not stored any energy in a storage root yet. So ideally, that's how you want to control the seedlings. So they become perennial approximately 6 weeks after emergence, and thereafter reproduce from deep and rapid spreading roots. This, in Canada, they found that a single plant produced 26 above ground shoots, 154 underground shoots, 364 feet of roots in 1 year from one seedling. So that just shows you how impressively robust this plant can be. And this, of course, was in Alberta. We probably have more favorable weather conditions in most of where your farms are located. Okay. Once it is reproducing vegetatively, then this is what we see, these rosettes come up. What time of year do these, on your farm, when would that appearance be? Probably April and May for most of you, okay? Certainly in Illinois, I would expect it to look like that sometime maybe mid-April. And so they have these robust lateral roots that are at many different depths, but that one right there might be at 6 to 9 inches deep. So tillage might be ripping up that first lateral root, but they have different layers of those lateral roots. And so anything deeper than the first lateral root is not probably going to be damaged by tillage. So this is just showing the idea that we have separate male and female flowers. Typically, there's no self-pollination. And since we have these single clones that just make a patch, you don't necessarily have any viable seed production just because you have a patch. Here's what the seeds look like. Obviously, those are hugely multiplied, but it's not a ridiculously tiny seed, about a tenth to a quarter of an inch long. They weigh about a tenth of a gram, and that floss helps them to disperse, but it easily breaks off, and then they stop flying. Typical flower produces dozens of seeds. A typical stalk, hundreds of seeds. So that's, that might seem like a lot, but that's not very many compared to lots of weeds. They are dispersed all over the place. They came from, like Southeast Europe, maybe Italy? No, I don't know about that. But Southeast Europe, I'm joking because I have my technician here, Andrea. Say hello to everybody. but they have spread all around the world. They are, Canada thistle is in Asia. You can see it's in most of this view of North America here. But as Dave said, they do need longer days, and they also seem to be inhibited by really high temperatures. So maybe if it gets a whole lot warmer in the Midwest, that might inhibit them, but of course the elevated CO2 might promote their growth. Okay, so what is Canada thistle's weak link? I think the weakest link of all that's easily addressed by organic farmers is that Canada thistle requires a lot of light. And that's, the basis of the strategy that Dave was describing, the suppression with this really dense stand of cover crop. At 60, 70% light interception, or when 30 to 40% of the light is blocked, shoot growth will be significantly reduced. At 20% of normal light, shoots will stop growing and eventually die. And so if you have an extended period of low light, less than 20% of normal light, your Canada thistle is just not going to grow at that time. Okay, and the shoot, not the root, but the shoot will eventually die. If you have suppressed the energy storage in the root, so Dave talked about doing some tillage early and then planting the smother crop in June. So if you let the Canada thistle get to that 12-inch stage, you terminate it, and then maybe you let it grow back up one more time and terminate it. Thank you. Then you put in your smother crop. There's not much energy left in the roots. And then you terminate the shoots with not allowing any light or very low levels of light. That's a system that if you do that for a whole year and ideally for a second year, you will greatly reduce Canada thistle. Okay. Most susceptible mechanical damage when the root reserves are moving upward. This is actually modified from the undergraduate student's research paper. And basically, where I have labeled roots are most depleted, at that stage in the spring when they are around 12 inches tall, they're starting to make buds, that's when you probably can do the most damage with tillage or mowing. Yes?
Quick question. Tarping. A lot of small scale operations and vegetables use tarping. Recently.
Tarping.
And my experience is after 3 or 4 weeks, you take the tarp off and thistles come back. Are you seeing something more effective?
So I don't think three. So the question was about tarping. The fancy word for that is occultation or light starving. And I don't think that 3 or 4 weeks is enough. But the research literature suggests that long-term light starvation with a tarp or with cover crops or even with dense cash crops, a dense cash crop canopy also can make a big difference. You will basically not allow any more light capture and energy storage. And so that just continues the process of depleting the energy stores. So I just think you have to do it longer than what you tried. If you did solarization, where you are really heating the surface, you would be killing the shoots, but of course not depleting the roots. Okay, so this is just a kind of a summary of some key ideas about trying to use tillage or mowing to deplete energy storage. Repeated removal of the shoots before they attain several leaves. So basically, you want to let it get a little bigger at first. So it gets to that around 12-inch stage. Maybe buds are starting to form. Chop it off, till it off at that stage. And then, essentially every 3 weeks, as it starts to grow a few more leaves, that's when you want to wait until it has done some regrowth, but not too many leaves. A few more leaves have grown, then you damage it again. And the basic idea is that it's mainly going to try to grow shoots in the spring and in the fall. And if you only are doing your damaging in the spring and, you know, midsummer, that's not sufficient. You have to be damaging the new shoots, the rosettes that are forming in the fall as well. Okay. Cutting up roots increases the number of plants, but it also makes each plant substantially weaker, and so it's easier to kill each chopped up plant because there's just much less stored energy. Yes?
So with that in mind, is it advantageous to hit it with a disc at some point to kind of chop up those roots if you've been ripping them?
My question is, if you've been hitting it with a field cultivator, would it be advantageous to hit it with a disc at some point?
I don't know if I have an answer to that. I mean, I think that your field cultivator is also going to be cutting up into it up into pieces, but something like a disc or a rotavator will chop it up into even smaller pieces. And I guess, you know, we have two things we're trying to accomplish. We're trying to starve the roots, but we're also trying to kill the shoots and small root pieces. And those small root pieces can be killed if they run out of energy, but they also are killed if they desiccate, if they dry out. Mm. And so a lifting type of tool is going to desiccate, dry out the soil even more. Over in Europe, like centuries ago, when they first started really dealing with quackgrass, they would actually plow when the soil was too wet, wetter than we think is optimal, so they could make all these clods that would dry out. And that actually was, I think, an effective strategy. Not a great strategy for soil health, but an effective strategy for drying out the roots. And something like that might also be useful here. Yeah?
Yeah, the research that I've read says, you know, in regards to using a disc and that, I think it's, you know, pros and cons. But well, what I have read is that try to stay away from doing too much of that later in the fall.
Okay, whoops, let's, okay. So, yeah, we have 5 minutes to go, and I think this is going to work out fine. Alfalfa, normally mowed 3 times or more a year. Not all hay is mowed so frequently, but a type of hay, whether it's alfalfa or something else that's mowed at least 3 times a year, is going to be much more effective than something that's only mowed 1 to 2 times a year. It doesn't have to be every 3 weeks, but if we're not mowing more than 3 times a year, we're probably not really effectively depleting the root reserves. Okay, this is a particular study I read about in Maryland. 2 years of repeated tillage during the summer. So basically they really hit it over and over again with tillage in the summer. Then they planted barley, very dense planting of barley, cut it for hay. They did that 2 times, so 2 years in a row. That reduced the thistle by 76%. Then it was low enough that they could go into alfalfa and have the alfalfa finish it off. So after 5 years, they could go back to row crops and had minimal canva thistle. Okay. Preventative measures, preventing it from being dispersed as seeds, from our fence rows, for example, or coming in manure or in purchase seed. These are important strategies to keep it off your farm. Anybody familiar with this butterfly? So the painted lady butterflies, in the last 5 years, we've started to see so many of them that conventional soybean farmers are spraying to control these, because the thistle caterpillar is what it's called when it's in the caterpillar form. It can, under some circumstances, cause a bunch of damage to soybean leaves. It can defoliate. I've seen it defoliate Canada thistle. But, this is just one more of the biological strategies that is a little hammer rather than a big hammer that's going to really control this on your farm. This is maybe the last thing we're going to talk about that I think is potentially the most interesting biological control of all. This article is from 2014, and it describes how researchers in Canada 20 years ago recognized that this fungus, Foma macrostoma, it can be a very, very potent bioherbicide, not just for Canada thistle. It can control many broadleaves, and so they began doing intensive research about 20 years ago. You could just read through this, a little bit of this with me. When isolated, concentrated, granulized, and broadcast, so basically making it into a product like a granular herbicide, this fungus packs a two-part punch. First, it releases a phytotoxin when absorbed by germinating seedlings that destroys the seedling's ability to feed. So basically, you end up with almost white seedlings. So it's acting very much like a residual herbicide. And then it destroys, it infects the susceptible weed's root structure, producing further phytotoxin from inside the plant. They found it to provide more than 50% control consistently of Canada thistle, 80 to 90% control of dandelion and wild mustard, so other broadleaves are also being controlled. And it also has a whole bunch of safety characteristics that are very desirable. It's non-competitive in the soil, so it doesn't persist. This is something that, obviously, it can control broadleaves such as our crops. And that's why we want to make sure that it does not persist in the soil. And also, if you're applying these granules, it stays right where it's applied, so it's not moving, it's not drifting into neighboring fields. Premier Tech is the name of the company. 2017, they were licensed in Canada. And it is registered in the U.S. and Canada now, but as far as I know, it is not commercially available today in the U.S. But it is something that, I think after millions of dollars of research, after getting it patented and registered, this is something that in the very near future will be a commercial product in the U.S. And I think, I'm pretty sure that through Premier Tech, it is actually available in Canada now, 2023. So I think I'm out of time. If there is any time for questions, we can take a question or two for Dave or me or anybody else. Yeah.
I just want to be real quick on it. About 10 years ago, I did a four-year study with the University of Minnesota going through a regular organic rotation of corn, soybeans, small grain, and alfalfa. And we would map each of the Canada thistle patches and counted each weed in each patch each year at the beginning of the season. And the percentage of infestation in that field stayed at about 6% through the corn, through the soybeans, and through the small grain. But after 2 years of alfalfa, we decreased the infestation down to less than 1%. And I only mention that because I think alfalfa is one of the most economical ways, at least until we get this, to take care of and manage Canada thistle.
I guess I would quickly add, the fact that it stayed at 6%, did not grow in his small grain and corn and soybean, is a testament to Carmen's good management of those crops, that he had a good canopy. I mean, a good canopy of corn, soybeans, or a small grain is very light suppressing. And if you have Canada thistle that is expanding during your cash crops, you probably need to focus on making a better canopy grow for your cash crop. Yeah.
So we're doing the same thing, and we added wheatgrass on the spots where the thistle are, and Dennis Demmel in Western Nebraska turned us on to this. We're in Western Kansas, and it's amazing what that wheatgrass has done. Combination of the alfalfa and the wheatgrass, and I don't know what the wheatgrass is doing, but boy, the thistle is hurting. So I don't know how wheatgrass grows around here, but
so what are you? How are you managing the wheatgrass? I mean, with alfalfa, we're cutting it at least three times a year. With the wheatgrass, what are you doing?
I just go ahead with swath it right up with the alfalfa, yeah. And then it's irrigated, so it comes back. It doesn't like the cutting and the foraging and grazing very well like alfalfa, but it comes back, and we reseed it every year. Mm-hmm. So it has a pretty good population on the thistle patches.
Excellent. Yeah, very interesting targeted approach that's more than just mowing and tillage, actually adding more plants out there. Yeah.
I just wanted to mention quickly, we've seen on our family farm in North Dakota, we've seen a rust occurring on Canada thistle on the farm naturally, and we started spreading it to patches just by cutting the plants, you know, by hand with a with some implement, and then using that same one to cut other patches and then spread the rust, and it's pretty devastating to Canada thistle patches that we've seen, and has helped us to control it pretty significantly. And I don't know what kind of rust it is. It just started.
Yeah, it's probably the same species that was obtained by Perry and that they are working on in Canada. I guess I do have one last slide. This is just a wrap-up concept. We lost the picture, but anyway, weed compost extracts. This is not something where we have specific work on Canada thistle, but the idea is maybe similar to what we were just hearing. Compost made from weeds can induce weed suppressive soils. We can promote essentially the pathogens that attack that weed species and enhance the soil's ability to suppress a particular weed. And so this may not be an important strategy for Canada thistle, but this is similar to, you know, a rust strategy or a purchase product. We can create biology that does help to control weeds in our fields in some targeted ways, like a compost extract.
To them individually as a group after, and we would like to thank, let's give a big hand to Joel. And to Dave, wealth of information.